For a moment, I thought I was hallucinating. I saw my neighbor across the road, an old man in his 80s, reach into his mailbox, only to pull his arm out to reveal his hand suddenly gone. The wrist now ending in jagged, yellow bone poking from blackened flesh. I watched on from my front window, where I had been lazily staring out as I sipped my morning cup of coffee. I often would see my neighbor come out to check his mail, then get the newspaper at the end of his driveway, as our little weekend morning rituals happened to coincide. On this Saturday, however, he never did get around to grabbing the newspaper. Bill Doherty stared at his knob for a moment. He seemed to study the exposed bone with only a mild interest, as if it were nothing more than a pesky paper cut. Then he peered into the mailbox, retrieved his detached right hand with his still working left, and started back for his home, the dead hand still clutching to a few pieces of mail. I rushed into my kitchen and told my wife what I had just seen. When I said it out loud, I realized just how insane it sounded. But I was adamant about what I saw. Sarah looked up from a bowl of cereal quizzically. His hand fell off. One corner of her mouth turned upward in a slight smile. Yeah, he reached in the mailbox, then pulled out a broken knob. She paused for a moment, then laughed and shook her head. I don't get it. Is this why you don't joke around a lot? You're not very good at it. I'm not joking. Her smile was replaced with a look of concern. Actually, you look pale. She stood and felt my forehead, looked me up and down. Are you feeling okay? I'm fine. I mean, I don't know. The world started to yaw slightly. My head felt light. I sat down. Sarah stared at me while biting her lip, something she often did when she was thinking carefully. Normally, I found it endearing and unbearably cute. And just 2 years into our marriage, it still made my heart flutter a little when she did that. But at that moment, it only bothered me. I knew she was considering the possibility that I was going insane. What? I snapped. Nothing, it's just... She started rubbing my shoulders. Relax a little, I think your eyes might have been playing tricks on you. You just woke up and you're still half asleep. I mean, people's body parts can't just fall off for no reason like that. I didn't say anything. Here, have some breakfast. You can't live off coffee, no matter how much you try. I picked at the bowl of cereal she poured out. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see her studying me and biting her lip. I kept thinking about Bill and his hand. I wish I'd been seeing things. I wish it had been some trick of the eye. But it wasn't. I knew what I saw. That was empty space where Bill's hand should have been, and that was bone sticking out of what looked like decaying flesh. The next morning, I stood, staring out my window, waiting for Bill and his ritualistic mail check. I could not get what I had seen the day before out of my mind. I would have gone over already if I didn't think it would concern my wife so much that I might be going nuts. But I needed to see Bill again. Would he come out with his hand this time? Had I been seeing things after all? Or would he come out with a bandaged knob? One question kept playing in my mind though, one that had caused dreadful nerves to sink through my stomach. Why had he been so unnervingly calm about losing his hand? I checked my watch. Bill would be out at any minute. I shifted my weight from foot to foot nervously. Bill's next door neighbor, Gary Nemechek, was already outside watering his lawn. The Nemecheks, Gary and Natasha, were a secluded couple, both curmudgeons in their early 50s. Gary was a short, pudgy man with no neck. Natasha, on the odd occasion I saw her, was a nasty-looking woman with a perpetual scowl on her face. They had managed to get on the bad side of most people in the street. No one had a nice thing to say about them. Sarah and I had a not-so-pleasant run-in with them ourselves during our first week in town. The morning after our housewarming party, we had found a scathing letter from Gary and Natasha slipped under our front door. They said they were reporting us to the homeowners association and that the next time we threw a party until, quote, all hours of the morning, they would call the police. That's the shorter and nicer version of what they said, with less expletives. A bit over the top, considering our party was relatively tame and over before midnight. Bill's door opened and snapped me out of my thoughts. He walked down his drive towards his mailbox, both hands where you would expect them. I shook my head. It couldn't be. I still had no doubts of what I'd seen. There's no mistaking something like that. I had to speak with him. I had to suss out what happened. I hurried outside, pretending to check my own mailbox. As Bill looked over, I gave him a wave and he flashed a big smile back. Bill and Angie couldn't have been more different to Gary and Natasha. Angie had cooked us a whole week of delicious dinners when we first moved in. "We've moved plenty in our lives," she told us as she delivered a stack of full Tupperware containers. "I know cooking after a long day of moving, unpacking, and settling in is the last thing you want to do." And Bill had helped me fix up the front garden beds after the last owner had left them in a state of disrepair. Bill had quite the green thumb, and thanks to his help, we had a great-looking garden instead of a total mess. "Nice morning," I said to Bill as I crossed the street. "Sure is. Glad to see it's warming up after winter went a bit long. I see your flowers are blooming nicely." "That they are," I said. "Thanks again for all your help." "You've thanked me plenty enough." I quickly glanced at his right hand. He was wearing long sleeves, despite it being a warm 82 degrees. Even so, I could see a bit of gauze wrapping around his wrist poking from under the sleeve cuff. That alone got my heart racing, but it was the hand itself that chilled the blood. It was deathly pale, like it hadn't seen sun in years, if ever. A stark contrast to his other hand, tanned and liver spotted. Not only that, the hand hung limp and unmoving, as if it were a prosthetic. Not even the slightest twitch of the fingers. "You're right, pal," Bill asked. "Huh? You look a bit sick all of a sudden." I swallowed nervously, my throat suddenly dry. "Yeah, just a bit of reflux is all." I tried to laugh, but it came off as a nervous chuckle. Bill's eyes narrowed on me with a suspicious gaze. I suddenly wanted to leave. Badly. That pale, dead hand hanging at his side really did make me sick. Something was terribly wrong with him, and his piercing gaze had all my instincts telling me to run. Just as I was about to make an excuse to leave, Bill looked over his shoulder at Gary, then leaned forward, leaning on his mailbox and lowering his voice. "Look who's trying to eavesdrop," he said. Gary had moved closer to us, standing at the border between his lawn and Bill's, right at the property line. He was facing away from us, but it was a thinly veiled attempt to make it seem as if he wasn't trying to listen in. "They're always so paranoid that people are talking about them," Gary continued. "Not surprised, really. People talk about those who are nasty as they are. Did I ever tell you about the cat incident?" I shook my head. "Well, a few years ago, before you and Sarah moved in, another family lived there. Not the same family you bought the house from, the one before them. They had a cat, an outdoor cat, and, well, you know how they are. They have a tendency to crap all over the place sometimes, don't they? Well, it seemed that this cat had a hankering of crapping in Gary and Natasha's garden. Now, I can sympathize with how frustrating that can be. Cat poo is rank, but that don't excuse what they did. What happened? Bill leaned in further, lowering his voice more. Gary was still watering that same patch of grass for an oddly long time, but I doubt he could hear what was being said. They poisoned the cat. It dropped dead one day, blood leaking from its little snout, those assholes. I saw them in the grocery store early that week too, and they happened to have some rat poisoning in their shopping cart. Well, I didn't think anything of it at the time. Not until that poor cat died. Jesus, did anyone do anything about it? Bill shrugged. What could anyone do? We can't absolutely prove it was them, and the cops have better things to do than chase up a case like that. But everyone knew it was them. He shook his head, sadly. Those poor kids were devastated. They loved their cat. It was a friendly thing too, not like some of those insane cats that'll swipe at you for no reason. Well, anyway, that family moved out shortly after the incident. I don't blame them. Of course not. That's terrible. Sure is. They really are nasty pieces of work. He leaned in even further, close enough that I could smell tobacco on his breath, and something else even more unpleasant. Something like rotting meat. But don't you worry, Bill said. They'll get what's coming to them. There was a troubling viciousness in that tone of his. Sarah was waiting for me when I got back home. She had her arms folded. She was biting her lip. Ben, you didn't go ask Bill if his hand fell off, did you? She asked. No, but he did have a gauze on his wrist, Sarah. So, he might have cut it. Awfully coincidental, don't you think? You don't really think is... I know what I saw, Sarah. I'm telling you that something strange is going on. She shook her head, exasperated. I suppose if the roles reversed, I would be too. It really was an insane conversation we were having. I really hope you aren't losing it, she laughed, but it was a strained laugh. She turned away, spinning her index fingers around a temple, the universal sign for you're a cuckoo. But 3 days later, she'd have a strange interaction with Bill's wife, Angie, and we would come to the realization something terrible was happening to our friendly neighbors across the road. They were decaying, rotting away before our very eyes. It was 2 days later. Sarah had come home from work late and walked in pale as a ghost. When I asked her what was wrong, she could only stammer. I got her to sit down and gave her a glass of water, which she took with shaking hands. I ran into Angie outside, she said. I saw her on a veranda when I pulled into our drive. What you had seen the other day popped into my mind, and I was thinking I'd go over and ask if everything was okay. I assumed she would say everything was fine, and it would help put your mind at ease. So I went over and... It's okay, I tried to calm her, brushed the hair out of her clammy forehead and tucked it behind her ear. She took a sip of water and gulped it down. And when I got close, she had her back to me, and I saw she was spreading a line of salt around her house. I was confused, so I asked her what she was doing, and she started muttering. Preparations, she said. Keep the seeking souls out. She said it a few times, and her voice sounded strange. It was hoarse and gravelly. I asked if she was okay, but she didn't answer. So I tapped on her shoulder, and she got a fright like she didn't know I was there, and she spun around and... Sarah moaned and covered her face with her hands. Oh, it was awful. It's okay, honey. What happened? Her eye. It was gone. Her eye was actually gone. Maggots were crawling around in the empty socket. There was also a big hole in her cheek. I could see her teeth and the stench. She groaned again. I almost screamed when I saw it. I told her she needed an ambulance, but when I got my phone out, she grabbed my wrist to stop me. Did she hurt you? No, but she wasn't exactly gentle. She said she was fine, really, and I needed to trust her that everything would be okay. But she was adamant about me not calling the ambulance. Told me it was very important not to. She made me promise that I wouldn't, and I just wanted to get out of there by that point, so I promised I wouldn't. Jesus, what the hell is going on over there? I don't know, but you were right. It's something very strange. I should go over there and try find out what the hell is going on. Even though the thought of confronting them in their state made me sick, I felt I had to. They had badly scared Sarah by now, and that sent a streak of anger and frustration through me. My first instinct was to try and protect her, to figure out what was happening, to fix the situation. But Sarah gripped my hand and squeezed it. No, don't. What if they're dangerous? And what if they're not? What if they're just sick and need help? Then why would they let me call an ambulance? I don't know. They're scared, maybe? In denial? Sarah bit her lip. What if it's contagious? Then it's a bit late for us. We've already been exposed. Her head dropped. Look, I'm sure we'll be okay, I said. But I think I should go over there and find out what's happening with them, and maybe try to convince them to call an ambulance. I don't think it's a good idea, Ben. And it probably isn't, a voice in the back of my head said. Something beyond your comprehension is going on here, something you should stay out of. But I ignored it. I wanted to get to the bottom of this. Needed to. For our sake. For our peace of mind. I can be very convincing, you know, I said. After all, I convinced you to marry me. She gave a short laugh. Your jokes really are terrible. She said it with a smile, and I was glad to make her feel a bit better, if only for a moment. I then wriggled free of her grip, and, against my better judgment and hers, went over to the Doherty's house. The sun had just set, the light was rapidly fading, and the house across the road looked darker than ever. The curtains were pulled shut, the veranda lights were turned off, and even the automatic security light didn't trigger. The street light to my right flickered with an electric buzz. Screeching birds, dotted against the twilight sky, flocked their way west. Behind the Doherty house, in the distance, a storm approached. The dark clouds seemed to rise malevolently from behind their home, framing it with a sinister backdrop. Occasionally, the clouds flashed with brilliant bolts of lightning. Thunder rumbled, the trees rustled as a cool wind picked up. I shivered as I approached the front doors. I knocked. No response. I looked back at my house. My wife's silhouette watched from our window. I knew she would be biting her lip, all the possibilities that might unfold running through her head. I gave a quick wave, and she gave one back. I knocked again. A strong gust of wind dislodged a branch from its tree somewhere. I heard it clatter against the roof. From inside came a groan, a bang as if a chair had been toppled over, shuffling feet near the door. When it opened a crack, the hinges whined, and a dark figure appeared in the small opening. Yes, Ben? It was Bill. His voice was strained and hoarse. His breathing was labored, that of rank sweat and decayed roadkill. I almost gagged. Bill, are you okay? Me and the wife, we're a bit worried about you and Angie. He laughed a dry, hacking laugh, a laugh like a man stricken with lung cancer. I peered in, trying to get a better look at him. but it was dark, and my eyes were still adjusting. "I know I don't look it," he said, "but we're okay. We'll live. Please, don't worry about us." And now, the horrid sight started to come into view. I stepped back and resisted the temptation to gasp, but my mouth hung open in shock. His face appeared to be melting. His cheeks sagged low, a chunk of flesh hung from his chin, the bone beneath exposed. His nose was gone, a dark, hollow opening in its place.
"Oh my God, Bill, we better call an amb-"
His hand shot up to cut me off. His fingers were black and rotting away like they were frostbitten. On his index middle finger, pale bone jutted from the tips.
"I appreciate your concern, Ben, but this is something you can't and won't understand fully. We are fine, and you are going to have to trust me on this. I have a lot more experience than you, young man. More than you could possibly imagine. So, believe me when I say, you better leave it alone."
He coughed. Something dark and viscous dislodged from his throat, fell out of his mouth, and landed on the floor with a plop. He paid no mind to it.
"Don't make us do something we will regret," he said.
"Bill, what the hell is going on here?"
I managed to get out.
"Go now," he said. "You have nothing to worry about, and by tomorrow morning, you'll understand a little better."
He shut the door in my face. His warning replayed in my head. "You better leave it alone. Don't make us do something we will regret." The words struck me deep, and I shuddered. I stood there, feeling small and useless. Any confidence I had in confronting him evaporated in an instant. I could feel the underlying aggression in his words, in his tone, and though he may look as if he were weak, old, and somehow decaying like a dead man, I felt power there, radiating off him like heat. A strange, uncanny power that made me want to run and hide and never come out. I may not have understood what was happening, but there is one thing I did know. I would heed his warning. Sarah and I didn't get a wink of sleep that night. How could we? We stayed together in bed while the rain fell in drenching sheets, watching a random show on Netflix that I'm sure neither of us were really paying attention to. Sometime during the night, through the sound of heavy rain and thunder, I heard what I thought was a muffled scream. I immediately turned to Sarah, and the look in her eyes told me she had heard it too. We got up from bed and nervously made our way to the front window. Peering out, we could see the Doherty house was no longer pitch black. Instead, orange candlelight glowed in the windows. A bolt of lightning flashed right over their house, so close the thunder cracked instantly. Then came another muffled scream. Longer this time, desperate and pained, and they were coming from the Doherty house. There was another two flashes in quick succession, but these were no lightning strikes. They came from inside the Doherty home, their windows lighting up in a brilliant white for fractions of a second. Thunder still cracked. Then the house went dark, the candlelight extinguished. Their house stood there, under the drenching rain and in the muted glare of the streetlight, dark and still. In that instant, with the way the dark windows seemed to peer back, with the way the trees framed the house and reached out with jagged branches, with the way the front gate had become unlatched and swung back and forth in the wind, the house looked evil.
"What the hell is going on over there?" Sarah whispered, her voice wavering. "I wish I knew."
We kept watching for some time, but nothing else happened.
the storm started to subside. We retreated to our bedroom, wondering how this happened to us. Life had been so normal. Our marriage was going great. Our new home was amazing. The neighborhood was, mostly, friendly and safe. Now this had threatened it all. We stayed up, letting the TV drone on in the background, too shocked to sleep, until eventually the darkness turned to light. The last of the rain faded, and the birds started to sing their morning songs. That was when the knock at the door came. We knew it was Bill and Angie. Who else would it be? Sarah and I went to the door together, dressed in our PJs, our eyes darkened by bags, and our skin the pale complexion of those who had not slept in over 24 hours. I wondered if Bill and Angie would be recognizable by now, or if their rot would leave them as little more than living husks. But what we saw was the complete opposite. Shockingly, they were vibrant. They looked healthy. They greeted me and Sarah with warm smiles. All their signs of decay had disappeared. And not only that, they had become younger. And it wasn't just that they looked younger by virtue of a good night's rest. They were younger by a good 25 to 30 years. They almost looked like totally different people. "We wanted to thank you for being so understanding," Angie said. Her skin was smoother, clearer. Her hair had regained its color and volume, and her eye was back. "Yes, we are very grateful for you not impeding our work," Bill continued. He had short sleeves on, and I could see his right hand was normal and moving. He was no longer completely bald, though still balding, and like Angie, his old skin had become smoother, the wrinkles less numerous and not as deep. "We should not have let you see us like we were," Angie said. "I suppose we got a bit sloppy, didn't we, hun?" "Yes, it happens sometimes. Every now and again, we become a bit complacent. It happens when you've been around as long as us." Bill winked as he finished that last sentence. "You two have been so nice to us since you've moved in." Angie smiled a big, warm smile. Her teeth were natural, not the dentures I was used to seeing. "You know, when you first moved in, we thought you were going to be our sacrifices. So young and healthy." My heart froze. Sarah leaned in a little closer. Sacrifices? What were they talking about? "But you were just too nice," Bill continued, "while others around here are not so nice." Angie nodded ahead in the direction of the Nemechek house. "Yes," Bill said, "and while they might not have been the best sacrifices, being older." Sacrifices, I thought. That word again. It kept playing in my head. "They were the most deserving," Angie said. They both laughed heartily. My wife and I couldn't even muster a nervous chuckle. We were speechless. "Anyway, we must be going now," Angie said. "As you might imagine, you won't be seeing us around anymore. It wouldn't be safe for us to stay, you know. The questions might start piling up." "And we hope you won't be talking to the police about us, correct? Or anything you've seen." There was Bill's more aggressive tone again, the one that had filled me with dread. Sarah and I shook our heads. "Good," they said in unison, and they both smiled. It was hard to tell if it was a friendly smile or a threatening one. "We'll keep you in our thoughts," Angie said. "We know you two will raise a wonderful family together." And with that, they turned and left. We plopped on our couch, totally gobsmacked and unsure of what exactly they were talking about. We were speechless for some time. "Keep the seeking souls out," Sarah suddenly whispered. "What?" "That's what Angie said. while she was pouring the salt that night. She turned to me. And they kept talking about sacrifices just now. I think she meant she wanted to keep the other souls out of the house in case they stole the sacrifices. Things started to click. And their sacrifices were the Nemecheks, I said. Yes, look at them now. They look the same age as Gary and Natasha. They sacrificed them, didn't they? Sacrificed them to stop their decaying, to reverse their aging. And then, all the pieces of the puzzle started to fall into place in my head. Their decaying turned to sudden age loss. Their talks of Gary and Natasha as deserving targets. Their eerie candlelight from their home. The screams. The two strange flashes of light. They had sacrificed Gary and Natasha to take their relative youth so that they could stop their unnatural decay and keep living. And who knows how many times they had sacrificed before, or how long they had been on this earth, or how long they would keep going. Like vampires, living for centuries, only they rotted, whatever they were, rotted like the ancient things they are, until they sacrificed. Jesus, Sarah, I think you're right. She bit her lip and stared blankly at the shut-off TV for a moment. Whoever they are, whatever they are, they found the secret to eternal life. She looked me dead in the eyes, as serious as ever. And we can never tell anything to the police, or they'll come for us. I nodded. Already ahead of you on that one. We never saw Bill or Angie again after that morning. Later in the day, a plain white truck came, and strange men piled Bill and Angie's belongings into it and drove off. The house was left abandoned. It's been 2 months. The Nemecheks are missing. Have been since that stormy night, of course. Detectives have come around, asking us and the neighbours if they've seen or heard of them. We, of course, said no. They asked us if we knew what happened to the Dohertys, or why their house was suddenly empty without them selling, or why they had seemingly vanished without a trace. We, of course, said no. The detectives told us to contact them if we see or hear anything, and we told them we would. But of course, we lied. My wife is right. Bill and Angie were nice enough to let us go once, but they might not be so kind if we started blabbing to the police. Even if they don't believe us, and who would? I don't think it's a good idea. We'll respect the Dohertys' wishes. Sometimes, it pays to be nice.